Meeting to order. City of Palm Coast City Council meeting. It is Tuesday, November 7, 2017. It is 6 p.m. Please join me in the pledge to the flag. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Holland.
Here.
Vice Mayor Nobile.
Here.
Councilmember Cuff.
Here.
Councilmember Klupas.
Present.
Councilmember Shibley.
Here.
Mayor, all members are present.
Great. We'll now open up to the public for public participation. Any member of the public can speak on items not on the agenda. You have up to 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record, and your 3 minutes will begin.
Charles Ebert, Palm Coast Hidden Lakes. I'd like to add to your workshop, since I wasn't able to attend the workshop that you had last, and I hate to bring up my favorite subject there, Mayor and City Councilman, about Waste Pro. I said, we know that there's a contract, and we know there's fines and damages to be assessed. And my issue was back with about skid marks and so forth, and I never got a resolution other than they did come out and try to clean them up somewhat. But now that we've been through hurricanes, and each event of those hurricanes, we did not have at least 1 month of yard waste pickup during that time. And that's time that we paid as taxpayers and residents under our water bill and so forth to have that service done. Now, I know this issue just came up because of the fact that the recent hurricane and the problems that you have. The biggest problem I have is the fact that reading the article that was in the Observer and under the sections of the B section, L section, and all those other sections, Cinnamon Woods, Woodlands, and so forth, it never mentions Texarkana or Hidden Lakes. Now, Hurricane Matthew, we barely got one release to come in there and take care of it. And we'd already cleaned it all up, and all they did is make a bigger mess than we already had. Now, we have a contract. The contract states there is fines and damages. Now, I don't know who enforces it, if the code enforcement, Ms. Grossman, or our city mayor or whatever, and so forth, but everyone is saying, well, give them times. All we want to do is have them be in compliance. Well, you know what? They're not going to be in compliance. They just entered this contract. This is a brand new contract this year. And for them to start off doing what they're doing now is deplorable. And I'd like to get action. And the only time companies and that kind of corporation, the only thing they really understand is their bottom line. And their bottom line needs to be taken care of because the contract states that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Good evening. Terrence Freeman, 800 West Monroe Street, Jacksonville, Florida. To the mayor, council members, thank you so much for your time. I work for Y Green Energy Fund, and we are one of the four PACE providers in the state. PACE stands for Property Assessed Clean Energy. I'm one of the area managers, just came on board, and so I'm getting around to the different committees and council members and meetings to introduce myself, one, and to share a little bit more about PACE if you're not familiar with it. The PACE program provides low-cost, long-term financing to private property owners for energy efficiency, renewable energy, and hurricane protection upgrades. Examples of this would be seawalls, impact windows, storm shutters, built-in generators, and HVAC systems, or solar. The benefits of activating PACE in your community helps create jobs, increases economic investment, it reduces energy costs and insurance premiums for property owners, makes properties more valuable. In the region currently, we're active in Alachua County and Green Cove. There is great conversation taking place in Clay. as well as Nassau and Duval. We've started the conversations there as well. So really looking forward to seeing this opportunity continue to grow. Some numbers in closing, over 12,000 properties to date by Y-Green, our company, have benefited from using PACE program, totaling over $250 million of energy efficiency and hurricane protections. We've certified over 1,300 contractors and created or sustained over 4,000 jobs. So in closing, by providing PACE, you can achieve the benefits of economic development, job creation, and reaching your policy goals without additional administrative, legal, or financial responsibilities. This means that a participating local government, we can offer PACE to your residents at absolutely no cost or liability to the government. And this has been done through an interlocal agreement. You currently have an agreement with the provider, an exclusive one. And one of the things that I'm doing as well is going to the different counties that have that existing relationship and asking if they would be willing to open it up for the three other providers. We have a track record, and I will gladly share information with you of projects that we've done in our state and how much money and investments we've put back into the community, and would love to be able to do it here. Thank you for your time, and look forward to meeting with you in the future days. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. We'll take it now to approval of the minutes. Agenda item number E1, minutes of the City Council. I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, passes unanimously. We'll now move to agenda item F, proclamations and presentations. 2, proclamation declaring November 15, 2017 as America Recycles Day. Councilmember Cuff will be presenting this proclamation. I'd ask anyone that's here to receive the proclamation to please come forward to the podium.
While they're doing that, Denise is actually the team leader of our green team. And Don is on the team, too. And Tom has been very helpful lately, so the Green Team members are the ones receiving the proclamation.
Whereas the City of Palm Coast recognizes the importance of protecting and preserving our natural resources and continually works to bring a high quality of life to our citizens by adopting conscientious living habits that improve our daily lives and bring about a cleaner, safer, and healthier sustainable environment. And whereas to focus attention on the importance of recycling and recycling correctly, businesses, industries, government agencies, nonprofit organizations, and individuals have joined together to celebrate America Recycles Day and are encouraging employers, staff, customers, members, and all citizens to pledge to buy more recycled content products starting on November 15th. And whereas participating in America Recycles Day on November 15th, 2017 is one way citizens can help raise awareness about the need to reduce waste by reusing, recycling, and buying recycled products. And whereas in the last 10 years, the households that receive waste services from the City of Palm Coast have recycled over 45,000 tons of waste, the same weight as the Titanic. And whereas, although there has been a significant increase in Palm Coast today, we must continue to focus on the importance of recycle often and recycle right to minimize contamination of recycling by keeping food, liquids, and plastic bags out of recycling. And now, therefore, be it proclaimed by the City of Palm Coast Mayor and City Council that November 15th, 2017, is hereby proclaimed to be America Recycles Day. Signed November 7th, 2017, Mayor Melissa Holland.
On behalf of the Green Team, thank you for the proclamation tonight. And in the spirit of the proclamation and encouraging recycling, I would encourage all of our visitors tonight to take with them a reusable shopping bag. And then also take this pamphlet to talk to really give a little bit of information about recycling here in Palm Coast. Again, thank you, Council. Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming down. They're coming up.
Oh, we're going.
Jason, Cindy would have this already all figured out and everything. Come on.
I'm hitting a lot of buttons in there.
Two,
three. One more. One, two, three. Thank you.
Super.
Awesome. I forgot to have a response to public comment.
Sure. Absolutely.
Sorry, Council. I forgot to actually address the public comments that were spoken at the beginning of the meeting. So I'd like to do that in advance of us moving on to the next proclamation. Mr. Ebert's comments about Waste Pro, with both hurricanes, 1 month of hurricanes without pickup, Toscana and Hidden Lakes not being addressed, and then enforcement and who enforces the contract and where we stand with it today.
Well, first of all, there's a misunderstanding out there that Waste Pro was not picking anything up right after the storm. Quite the opposite. They were picking up more than they normally do. It's just that we actually contracted with them unexpectedly to help us with storm debris pickup because the national companies who we have a contract with were busy elsewhere and said, we'll see you in a few weeks. So we went to Waste Pro and said, we have crews that can get started, but do you have some crews that can also get started and focus as much as we could on the storm debris pickup, which means they weren't doing the regular Wednesday yard debris pickup, but they were out there picking up more than normal, but obviously not being able to hit every neighborhood. So the perception that they aren't coming around was strictly a result of storm debris. And we actually owe them a thanks for trying to help with storm debris pickup because, once again, we had no contract with them to do that at all. The issue, though, is once we got the national haulers in here and we started getting into regular pickup, then it was a matter of them getting back on schedule and not missing. And this is where we've had some issues with them here lately. They are going to announce additional trucks and crews. I'm not sure exactly how many at this point because they realize they are not getting it done in a timely fashion. So they are going to address those. As far as one neighborhood versus the other, every neighborhood out there thought they were the last neighborhood. And it wasn't the case at all. I'd like to give really good news is as of today, we finished our first round of storm debris pickup. So are we finished? No, because as you all know, as we were picking up one street and moving on to the next, then there were still people who had not cleaned up their storm debris and they were putting it out there. So for a storm of this magnitude, you always do two passes, and we will start the second pass tomorrow. And we've started chipping. If you've ever drive by US 1, once again, where we store most of it, it's a huge pile. We've started that process. So it's come along quite nicely. And we have today told Waste Pro that they are to go back to regular schedule for all services, including regular yard debris, as regular schedule. They will not pick up large piles. They will only pick up those piles that are within their limit. And then our second pass for storm debris crews will come around and pick up the large piles. And that will all be coordinated through actually code enforcement because they're out there and they know where they are, and so they report where the large piles are. So that's where we are. We're in that second phase or second pass. And this is The storm debris pickup is not a Waste Pro pickup at all. They're not our contractor for that, so that's kind of the misperception. Hopefully that addresses those issues.
Mr. Freeman, I'm very well aware of the PACE program. It started, actually, I think former Commissioner Barbara Revel served on that board when it started when I was on the county commission. So I don't know where we are as far as an interlocal agreement.
Well, I think it's a county program, and the county has it for the entire county. I know a few years ago we looked at it. Denise Bevan was our point. I don't think it's – I think you can have it countywide and not each individual city. But it's been a while since we've had that discussion. I'd be happy to get Denise hooked up with our guests and see if there's something we can do more for the community, because if we can help people make those kind of improvements, that's a good thing.
Okay. So, Mr. Freeman, please give your information to Ms. Bevan before you leave tonight. Okay. We'll now move to agenda item number 3, which is a proclamation designating November 17, 2017 as World Diabetes Day. Council Member Clufus will be presenting this. I would ask all receivers of this proclamation to please step forward to the podium.
Whereas the American Diabetes Association estimates that nearly 30 million people in the United States are afflicted with or affected by diabetes, and another 86 million are still at risk for developing type 2 of the disease over the next decade. And whereas having diabetes elevates the risk of heart disease, amputation, kidney failure, and blindness, causing serious hardship for families across not only our city, but also our county, state, and nation. Whereas the American Diabetes Association has established November 14, 2017 as World Diabetes Day to educate citizens on ways to predict if someone is at risk of the disease and to help recognize the symptoms of diabetes and to follow suggestions for living a quality lifestyle while they endure the infliction. And whereas the City of Palm Coast and Florida Hospital Flagler together recognize that the growing number of diabetics in our own community and across America make a strong case for devoting more of our resources to help find a cure. Whereas Flagler Schools, in coordination with Florida Hospital Flagler, have established the Morning Mile program, encouraging students to walk or run before school, and the future problem solvers of Bunnell Elementary will be focused on educating students both type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Palm Coast Mayor and the City Council declare November 14, 2017 as World Diabetes Day in Palm Coast and urge all residents and their families who struggle with the consequences of diabetes to choose to live their own quality of life and not have diabetes live it for them. Signed this 7th day of November 2017, City of Palm Coast, Florida, Mayor Melissa Holland.
Thank you, Nick. My name is Tony Papandrea, and I am the chairman of the Florida Hospital Flagler Foundation. And on behalf of Florida Hospital Flagler and the foundation, I am so pleased to accept this proclamation. And this is our second year doing this, and for the continuing partnership that we have with the city to increase the awareness of this dreadful, terrible disease. So I'm going to hold my remarks to a very minimum. And I will tell you that Jack, Khalil, and Stanley can do this much, much better than I. So, Jack.
Great.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jack Gilberry, and this is Stanley Gadzik, as well as Khalil Robinson, Zachary Bennett, Jordan Shutter. And sadly, our coaches, Mrs. Bennett and Mrs. Berry, could not make it tonight. We are very excited to present our project to you.
Did you know that over 29 million people have diabetes, or that over 70% of these cases are preventable? We are part of the Bunnell Elementary School Problem Solvers, and our group will be focusing on providing diabetic screenings and education to Flagler County citizens so that people have a better chance of avoiding this disease.
This disease personally affects me because my father has been a type 1 diabetic since the age of 14, and I always worry that I could be coming home to a house without a dad. It is really scary to see your 6'4" dad go from being very active to a state of drowsiness in a second due to his blood sugar running low.
Diabetes currently plays a big role in my grandmother's life. She was first diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, but 3 years ago was officially diagnosed as type 1. On the other side is my grandpa, who is a type 2 diabetic, but has lost 165 pounds. Due to this change, he is no longer insulin dependent, and his loss of weight has changed his life and health forever.
My family has also been affected by diabetes. My grandmother has been a type 2 diabetic for some time. Her blood sugar sometimes reaches up to the 200s. Multiple times she has passed out and been hospitalized because of this disease.
Diabetes is a deadly disease that affects millions of people. Working to provide screenings and education to citizens will help to prevent the disease throughout Flagler County. Thank you for your support in helping us to succeed in our community.
Thank you.
When we start that young with awareness, can you imagine when he gets to be 28 years old? Amazing. Next, I'd like to have Laura Gilvary step up and say a few words. Laura is a member of the foundation board, and she's the mom of Jack, so there you go.
Not all of them, just to clarify.
That's what I said, just Jack.
So we appreciate the opportunity to be up in front of you again this year. I know many of you have heard me speak before. It is certainly close to our heart and in our home, but we feel a great passion for making sure that the emergency services department decreases 75% of their calls, which we understand now is a statistic. 75% of their calls are related to diabetes in our community. So if we can be proactive in managing this disease, as many people do have the capacity to do so, and we can get ahead of it, we think that we could obviously save a lot of money, but lives as well. We would, you know, graciously challenge the city of Palm Coast to go blue. That is the signature color for World Diabetes Day. So on November 14th, if the city were to consider wearing blue and feeling free to post that on Facebook and tagging in the hospital and Bunnell Future Problem Solvers, what a great team who, you know, obviously this affects probably every single person in this room, if we're honest. By, you know, if you were to have a show of hands, probably everybody knows somebody who's impacted by diabetes. So thank you for the continued support. I know last year we had kind of challenged the city to light up blue. I don't know if you recall the challenge, but the hospital will be lighting up blue this year, so perhaps next year we can make that initiative go citywide. Thank you so much for your time and support of this initiative.
Thanks, Laura. And in closing, I can give you lots of statistics, but in our community there are 15,000 diabetics. 4,000 do not know they're diagnosed. So those are the people we need to address and create the awareness for them. Where are we going in the future? You know, I vision us having a nurse educator at our hospital, dedicated to our hospital. I envision us having a diabetic wound center that's a standalone that can treat these people. So down the road, if we continue to go forward as we are with these type of proclamations and awareness, we'll get there. So thank you, Melissa. Thank you, City Council, and we appreciate it.
Picture.
John will bring the flag.
No,
we
like
to come
off.
You want to come
off?
Go ahead. I'll stand in front
with the flag of the kids. We're going to lay your finger.
Thank you.
Okay, now to me. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. One more. 1, 2, 3. Thank you.
Thanks again, guys.
Thank you. Sounds good. All right, sounds good. Thank you. It is good stuff.
Thank you all. Get tested.
Okay, we'll now move on to agenda item number F4, which is a proclamation designating November 25th, 2017 as Small Business Saturday. Vice Mayor Nobile will be presenting. I'd ask everyone that's receiving this proclamation to please come up to the podium.
We wouldn't have counted.
And I will struggle a little to read this because over the last week or week and a half, my sugar has been very high because I'm a diabetic, so that's a very important message prior, but this one is just as important. Whereas the city of Palm Coast, Florida celebrates our local small businesses and the contributions they make to our local economy and community. According to the United States Small Business Administration, there are currently 28.8 million small businesses in the United States. They represent 99.7% of all businesses with employees in the United States and are responsible for 63% of net new jobs created over the past 20 years. And whereas small businesses employ 48% of the employees in the private sector in the United States, and whereas on average, 33% of consumers' holiday shopping will be done at small, independently owned retailers and restaurants. And whereas 91% of all consumers believe that supporting the small, independently owned restaurants and bars is important. And whereas 76% of all consumers plan to go to one or more small businesses as part of their holiday shopping. And whereas the city of Palm Coast supports our local businesses that create jobs, boost our local community, and preserve our neighborhoods. And whereas advocacy groups as well as public and private organizations across the country have endorsed the Saturday after Thanksgiving as Small Business Saturday. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Palm Coast Mayor and City Council do hereby declare November 25th, 2017 as Small Business Saturday and urge the residents of our community and communities across the country to support small businesses and merchants on Small Business Saturday and throughout the year. Signed the 7th day of November 2017, City of Palm Coast, Mayor Melissa Holland.
Thank you, Steve. My name is Jorge Gutierrez. I'm the president of Flagler County Chamber of Commerce. It's a pleasure to be here. On behalf of the local business community, thank you for this proclamation. Small Business Saturday is a day to support the local businesses that create jobs, boost the economy, and preserves neighborhoods around the country. Small businesses are critical to the nation's overall economy. Over the past two decades, they have created 65% of net new jobs. Their importance to local communities extend even further. Their importance to the local community extends even further. For every $100 spent in locally owned independent stores, $68 returned to the community through taxes, payroll, and other expenditures. For years, our chambers have supported this initiative by encouraging residents and members to shop local, just not on Business Saturday, but throughout the year. This is important because when you buy from an independent, locally owned business rather than a nationally owned businesses, significantly more of your money stays in the community and is used to make purchases from other businesses and services providers, continuing strengthening the local economic base. And with that said, thank you again, and I hope you will shop local November 25th and throughout the holiday season. Thank you.
Thank you.
Where are we coming? Where are you going to sit? In front?
You can go up.
We can go up?
Yeah, you can go up.
Let's go up.
Sure.
Could you take that afterwards?
I'm going to take a couple with this and then a couple with this.
Thank you.
Just give me 1 sec. On three. 1, 2, 3. 1, 1, 2, 3. 1 more. 1, 2, 3. And 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. And 1, 2, 3.
Thank you. Thanks for your new guys. That's cool what you do. Keep it up.
Thank you. Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number G5, an ordinance. Oh, it's an ordinance, Mr. Reichman.
Yes, Madam Mayor. The title of this ordinance is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, providing for the amendment of the official zoning map established in Section 2.06 of the City of Palm Coast Unified Land Development Code. We're amending the official zoning map for 6.2 acres, more or less, certain real property described as part of tax parcel ID number 27103400100010. This property is located on the south side of Matanzas Woods Parkway, extending between the new alignment of Belterra Parkway and the old alignment of Belterra Parkway, and is more particularly described in the Exhibit A attached to this ordinance. We're rezoning from public, semi-public, or PSP zoning district to neighborhood commercial zoning district, which is also known as COM1. This ordinance provides for conflicts of severability and provides for an effective date. Mayor, Council, this is the second reading of this ordinance, and it's quasi-judicial. So if there has been any, any ex parte communications on this matter since the first reading, those would be disclosed at this time.
Any councilmen? No.
Mayor, City Council, this is a second reading. You've heard the full presentation at your last business meeting. There's been nothing new. It is a rezoning there on Matanzas Woods between Belterra and Old Belterra from public, semi-public to commercial. So we believe it's ready for final action. Staff and Planning Board both are recommending approval.
Any questions or discussions before I open up to the public? Seeing none, I'll open this to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number G5, please do so at this time. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number H6. Mr. Reichman.
Yes, Mayor. This legislative matter, the title is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, amending Chapter 2, Administration, Article Roman numeral 6, Retirement, Division 2, Volunteer Firefighter Retirement System and Trust Fund. This ordinance amends Section 2549, which is supplemental benefit, provides for severability for codification for conflicts, and provides for an effective date.
Mayor, City Council, this is a housekeeping item. You know, in addition to our paid career firefighters, we have a very strong volunteer firefighting force. One of the benefits we provide them is a retirement program that's paid for out of state insurance funds. This is a fully funded retirement program. Every year we take a look at it and make sure that we have enough funds to do so. And then any excess funds, we have a share program for those that are active, share in the excess funds for the retirement program. In this case, we've been advised that in order to keep it fully funded, we needed to change the policy via this ordinance to add at least $200,000 to the program, minimum $200,000 to the program. And so that is what this is accomplishing, up from about $144,000. Once again, it doesn't have any impact on our budget. These funds are state funds, but we do have the responsibility of making sure that it stays fully funded and that is accomplished by this action.
Council, any questions or discussions? All right, open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number H6, please do so at this time. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number H7. Mr. Reichman.
Yes, Mayor, Council. The title of this ordinance is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, providing for the amendment of the official zoning map established in Section 2.06 of the City of Palm Coast Unified Land Development Code. It's amending the official zoning map for 11.33 acres, more or less, of certain real property, described as part of tax parcel identification number 3912-3140-0101-00056. It is generally located on the east side of Old Kings Road, approximately one-third mile north of State Road 100, or Moody Boulevard, and more particularly described in the attached Exhibit A to the ordinance. The rezoning is from high-intensity commercial, or COM3 zoning district, to multifamily residential, or MFR2 zoning district. This ordinance provides for conflicts for severability and provides for an effective date. Mayor, Council, this is the first reading, and this matter is quasi-judicial, so if there have been any ex parte communications on this matter that have been received prior to tonight, those should be disclosed at this time.
Council?
No.
Seeing none, Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is indicative of more and more development activities we're seeing in growth. And, you know, one of the all the numbers show us that one of the type of residential units we don't have enough of, that we're very short in this community, is multifamily. So that's why you're starting to see these applications. This case, it's actually from commercial to multifamily in a commercial area. So Bill will give you all the details on this application. Bill, take it from here.
This site is 11.33 acres, located on the east side of Old Kings Road. It's about a third mile north of State Route 100, and it's shown in the yellow towards the bottom of the screen there. The site's also about a mile and a half south of the Hidden Lakes Drive in the Hidden Lakes subdivision. It's to the top center part of the screen. There's Hidden Lakes, and the subject property is down there. Kings Point Commercial Subdivision, it's about 37 acres. It's located to the south of the subject property. It includes the big lake there with the Kings Point commercial name in it. There's about 8 lots on the east side of Old Kings, 4 or 5 on the south side of the lake, and then there's also some land possibly for like a hotel or motel. Florida Pioneer Limited Liability Corporation owns the subject property, 21 acres to the north, and also about 15 acres across Old Kings to the southwest. They want to rezone this property from COM3 or high intensity commercial to multifamily residential 2 and sell the land to a third party. The subject property, as well as all the property adjacent to it, is zoned mixed use on the future land use element. And in this mixed use designation, it allows all SFR, MFR, office and commercial zoning districts to be located there. So you can see it's a full mixed use. And specifically, it states that general retail, offices, and professional services with a blending of residential and institutional uses are permitted. The map on the left is our current zoning map, and you can see it's the COM3s to the north, goes all the way up, including the Walmart site. It's across the Old Kings Road, and it's also a to the south at Kings Point Commercial. to the east and northeast in the blue area. That's the Tuscany Village DRI. And nearby the property, there's a very large preserve area. So there's whatever develops there, they're probably never going to know what gets developed on this site, because that preserve area is about 169 acres on the DRI. In the COM3 zoning, on the left side of the screen, you could see some of the uses that are already allowed there. So you have things like car dealerships, heavy equipment rental yards, home improvement stores, LP gas dealerships with bulk storage, four-story hotel. With the MFR2 zoning district, you basically get three land uses that you can probably expect: condos, townhouses, or apartments. The density's up to 12 units per acre on land that ends up being designated uplands. In this case, most of the land appears to be uplands. And then 3 units per acre on preserved wetlands. So if all 11.33 acres were considered uplands, then they'd be a maximum of 136 dwelling units that could be constructed.
Question, Bill.
Bill,
I got a question. Can you go back one slide? That number for the units and the acres, that doesn't include parking. It's just a formula. So if it's 11 acres, you can have 136 acres.
Right. So if,
units. I'm sorry.
Right. So what you would expect, 12 units per acre is pretty common for a condo or apartment complex out
okay.
there across the state. It usually will give you 2 or 3 story buildings, and you'll have a stormwater lake with that, as well as any wetland or preserve areas, the parking, and then there's the one thing: when you get to 100 multifamily units, usually if it's apartments, you get a professional management team that usually, one of them usually will live on site, and then you also have recreational facilities for the residents. Okay.
Mr. Nobile, the calculation is gross acres.
Includes everything.
It's just
yeah.
the gross acres. And if it's wetlands, it's a smaller 3 units.
Right.
And if it's
But that
upland,
includes, like you said, that
yep.
includes everything. That says this is how
it's,
much per
this
unit,
is how many
per
units
parking,
you can,
and blah, blah, blah.
How many units you can have on the gross acre, and but you have to fit in all those other things.
Things was within there.
Right.
Super. Thank you.
The applicant notified the neighbors that were located within 300 feet of the project by U.S. mail on October 3rd. The neighborhood information meeting was held on October 12th at 5:30 p.m. in the council workshop located behind me. And no one from the public attended this neighborhood meeting. However, we did get calls from two neighbors who lived nearby the Hidden Lakes subdivision. They basically asked questions about the project. We welcomed them to attend the planning board. Staff is required by the Land Development Code to review all rezoning and development order petitions with the 5 criteria shown. It must not be in conflict with public interest. Needs to be consistent with the Land Development Code and comprehensive plan, must not impose a significant liability or hardship on the city, must not create an unreasonable hazard or nuisance, and must comply with all applicable governmental standards. Staff analyzed this, and in our opinion, the MFR2 is compatible and would be compatible with neighboring properties and the comprehensive plan. The MFR2 is also consistent with its mixed-use designation on the future land use map. Old Kings Road, adjacent to the site, is 4-lane with sufficient capacity to serve the project, and additionally, water and sewer are nearby and available to serve the site. Some of the other things that came out of our analysis was that the project will have a full access onto Old Kings Road, and it would be at the very northeast, the very north portion of the Kings Point commercial subdivision. And this shared access also will allow future residents to not only have lake views onto the lake, but will also allow residents to drive on these frontage roads clear around there without having to get on to Old Kings Road or State Route 100. Additionally, at the very corner of Old Kings Road and State Route 100, a site plan came in for a racetrack convenience store with 18 gas pumps. It's probably going to be designed very similar to the one on State Route 100 over at Seminole Woods. So that's probably going to be approved here within the next 45 to 60 days. It commenced construction at that time. The multifamily project would likely encourage more commercial activity also at Kings Point Commercial, which has been sitting there for about 8 years waiting for development, as well as encourage future commercial in nearby areas. Five residents from or nearby the Hidden Lakes subdivision spoke against this project at the planning board with a couple key concerns. One of those was they weren't receiving a site plan showing all the buildings laying out. Another one was, I think, the unknown. And one of the most important issues that was brought up time and again was traffic issues. Per the Old Kings Road widening development agreement with the city council back in spring of 2008, this development agreement between the property owners along there realigned Old Kings Road for the Walmart site, but it also gave this property as a traffic concurrency for a floor area ratio of 20% of its high-intensity commercial. So generally on traffic studies, if you don't know what's going in on the commercial site, we just use shopping center. So at a 20% floor area ratio of the entire site, so if you got a 5-acre site and you had a 20% floor area ratio, you'd have a building of 1 acre or 43,700 square feet. So to analyze this traffic, we did some trip generation numbers based on the ITE's trip generation book. And a 98,700 square foot shopping center would generate 4,200 daily trips during the week. However, if we looked at the proposed project, if it was developed as apartments and it maxed out the density, it would be 136 apartment units, which generate about 7 trips per unit per day, or a total of about 900 daily trips. If it was developed as condos or townhouses, those trips would be a little bit less. They're about 6 per day, and those would be about 800 trips, or a reduction of 81% over the commercial trips. Planning staff and the planning board, by a unanimous vote, recommend approval to City Council to rezone the 11.33 plus or minus acres from high-intensity commercial to multifamily residential 2 for Kings Point Multifamily Application Number 3421. And the applicant's representative is here. Charlie Faulkner is their representative. In his place is the project attorney, Mr. Livingston.
I presume.
So, council members, any questions before we open it up to the applicant?
I have one. Yes. We spoke about the infrastructure as far as our roads are concerned, but what about our underlying infrastructure as far as sewage and water? Is that capable of sustaining this type of project, and where would that align with if it was remained in a commercial zoning?
The water and sewer is there, and there's a pump station, a sewage pump station, is my understanding, talking to utilities department, and they would have to do an analysis to be able to know if the existing sewage lift station can handle this. Otherwise, they would have to put in another smaller unit to suffice for that.
Understood. Do commercial lots have a tendency to use more? I assume that they would use less than a residential usage as far as sewage and water. Is that true, or am I mistaken?
I would say yes, unless you got Coconut's car wash across the street. So a car wash might use more than a residential, but I would say a multifamily would generally use more than, like, a Walmart doesn't use very much water and sewer, I don't think.
Understood.
But the fact of it is that when we widened Old Kings Road, we put that infrastructure in there to handle this. So this infrastructure is not an issue at this location whatsoever. It's other than we built it and they haven't come yet. That's probably the biggest issue.
Okay. We'll now open it up to the applicant. Please state your name for the record.
Good evening. Jay Livingston here on behalf of Flagler Pioneer Group. I don't have anything to add to the staff report because this is just a rezoning from the red, the COM3, to the MF2. But if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Sure. Councilmember Cuff?
Yeah, I know we're a long way from site plan and the actual development, Jay, but what's the applicant's rationale for having the acreage rezone being on either side of Old Kings Road right away?
It's not on either side.
Well, the
map's a little bit. I understand why you asked that. That actually shows the old right of way. The split that you observed was the old right of way that still exists back in the woods. If you can put the rezoning map back up or the aerial.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the. So we're actually, it's a unified piece, and we'll that will be torn up and improved when they put the site in. But yeah, it's a little bit confusing because when the road was realigned, it essentially created this parcel coming off of Kings Point.
Yeah. The old road is still there,
yes, sir.
But it's private property
yes, sir.
Now.
It's back there in the woods if you want to find it.
Any other questions, council members? If not, I'll open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment, please state your name and your 3 minutes will begin.
Charles Ebert, Palm Coast, Hidden Lakes. I was present during the planning board that was approved unanimously for this type of multi-use. But the one item that came up that the school district representative, David Freeman, mentioned and so forth, is that Old King Elementary School is at the limit. So when you add this multi-family into there, their students will get priority to go to Old King Elementary. And the other students will have to be bused north to Belterre Elementary. The property itself, yes, we have a four-lane there, but it's a divided four-lane, and there's no crossovers or no signals or so forth for the traffic to go around on Old King or into Highway 100. Also, the fact that was brought up during the planning board, and I got some results today from utilities, that the current pump station that was just installed last year, that we moved from one location to another location because of the capacity that we were not having with the old one because it was overflowing when we had problems with water or rain or so forth. That needs to be addressed because if that station is overwhelmed, then we're going to end up with the same problem we had 7 years ago with the old station overflowing and EPA getting involved and so forth because that's raw sewage that's being put on the ground. The other item is that south of 100, there is no four lane. Okay? And that's where Old King Elementary comes into. Now, we've done some reestablishing of lanes there with that and so forth. But we still have heavy traffic in there, especially during the school time of elementary years, so forth. And I think that we're 7 years down the road in this, but it needs to be addressed to the seller and so forth, is that there is impact that will take effect to the city because of the fact of traffic and the fact that that pump station already takes everything south down into Simmons Woods and so forth to go north to our water plant treatment plants. So I do respect that this is in consideration with everything, and thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
My name is Carl Murphy. I live in Hidden Lakes. I was here for the Planning Commission meeting, and I can say, as a social studies teacher down in Wachula in the 1970s, I taught a class entitled Americanism versus Communism, which showed the difference between American representative government and a Politburo. What I saw at that, in my opinion, was a Politburo, because everything was decided before the first person got up to speak. Facts were presented like, oh, the amount of traffic is going to be different. No, it's not, because you're going to have a flood of traffic between 6 and 8 in the morning. You're going to have another flood of traffic between 4 and 6 in the evening. So this hodgepodge of, oh, it's going to be the same as a commercial, it is not true, because they're not going to show up to a commercial till 10, and then they're going to be all day just sporadic, not a lump of people going back and forth. The only true answer that came from that board meeting was from the representative of the land speculator, who evidently has owned this land for 8 years and can't get rid of it, is when I asked the question, why isn't these apartments being put here in town center where it is already zoned for apartments? And his answer was, quite frankly, we don't own land at town center. So that is the only reason and the only thing that was put forth that was a true and correct answer. There's a movie that we used to show in civics class entitled Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And in it, a gentleman by the name of Jefferson Smith is appointed to the Senate. And what he sees there is nothing but the moneyed interests represented by Senator Payne and the people, on the other hand, who are represented by no one. What I see here is a land speculator who, in my opinion, is held onto a piece of property, cannot get rid of it. Here is an opportunity to dump it. And when they dump it, they dump it not only on the people in Hidden Lakes, they dump it on the city of Palm Coast. If you had an opportunity to read the Wall Street Journal today, you would have seen an article which said, home ownership is on the rise, apartment dwelling is on the decrease. We're already building apartments in Palm Coast. So what are you going to do? You're going to have fewer dollars chasing more apartments, which tells you that they will not maintain the maintenance, and in 10 years, you will have Detroit sitting beside I-95, and the only sign that this council will need to put on 95 at that point is, don't stop here. Because, quite frankly, you're ruining the place.
Thank you for your comments. Committee. Thank you for your comments. Next speaker. No, that's not how this works, ma'am.
Which, once again, the individual can speak all he wants, but the public can't.
My name's Susan Murphy, and I live in Hidden Lakes. I have a question. The concern is about, there are many concerns. One is about the traffic. The gentleman was talking about the expanded infrastructure. These new people that come into the apartments, are you not going to let them cross the canal? That's only a two-lane. Do they have to turn or make a U-turn and go back to 100? Or do they have to turn and go on to town center, which is also another two-lane? So you keep talking about it's a four-lane. There is a very small section of four-lane. The rest of us encounter traffic every day. The traffic is getting more and more. And as we get more people into Palm Coast, it's going to get more. We all have probably had some bad experiences with apartment dwellers. I know I have. I was an apartment dweller at one time, but I treated that apartment as if it was mine. The problem with apartment dwellers, most of the time, not all of the time, are they have no skin in the game. And for those of us who own homes, who chose to move here and make this our forever home for whatever days we have left, we have all of our skin in this game. And this is important to us. And we just ask that you listen to us and not make your decision up before you come in this room. You were elected to represent us. Please do that. Thank you.
Your comments, next speaker.
Hi, Lisa Zurheide from Hidden Lakes. I just have some questions and some comments, I guess. Just a point of clarity. Was there one public meeting or two public meetings?
You'll answer the question after you're done speaking.
Okay.
Thank you.
Because one of the things said that nobody from Hidden Lakes was at one of the public meetings, so I didn't quite understand that. I'm all for progress, but I do have a couple of questions or thoughts. I know there's apartments currently in Palm Coast, and I've heard some things about there's a lot of police activity and emergency vehicles going over there. So I would just request that the town maybe do some kind of analysis and look at the impact on our police force and our emergency, because I know one of the slides said that there would be no impact. So I think it would be really good if we did some kind of analysis on that. And the other question I have is, who would be responsible if we do have to put another lift station in? Who would be responsible for paying for that? Would it be the developer, the residents moving in, or would it be us? Would it be the town? Let's see. I am concerned about, as she said, the entering and exiting of that property, because everyone would have to go north to make a U-turn to go south. So I do think there is an impact on the roads and the traffic there. I think that's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Good evening. My name is Tony Flores, and I live in Hidden Lakes. Just some facts on the area. I'm new to this area 2 years, and I'm a pro-business person. And the shopping center that's going to be on the corner, it's just going to be another simple shopping center. You know, why can't this developer be more creative and try to get some big stores and have an anchor store? You know, I get tired going to St. Augustine and Daytona to buy goods. I like to leave the money here in Park Coast. Secondly, the apartments, why would they consider selling part of it to the hospital? It'd be good for nurses and doctors that are coming in that need housing. You know, it's right around the corner. And also, you have a growing senior citizen community here. So why can't some of these apartments be for senior citizens? And lastly, Hidden Lakes is going to have 352 single-family homes. Next door, you got Toscana, about 120. And then you got a little piece of land called, it's a cemetery there, okay? And that's really undeveloped. So it's going to be sandwiched in between that and all this new development with all these school buses going back and forth early in the morning with no lights. There's no lights on Old Kings Road, and it gets flooded. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Good evening. My name's Louis Zerhad. I live at 25 Arrowhead in Hidden Lakes. First of all, the mailing that came out to all our neighbors within 300 feet, the only thing within 300 feet, I don't even think Coconut's car wash is there. So that's twice it's been brought up that no one attended that meeting. And 12 people from Hidden Lakes, including myself, attended that meeting. Now, the traffic that's going to come out of 136 units, Figure everyone has two cars. That's well over 250 cars coming out of there 24/7. At the planning board meeting, we were told that Old Kings Road is rated an A-rated road. However you rate those things, that's what we were told. I don't know how it could possibly be an A-rated road when north of it just finished draining last week from the hurricane and the rain that came after it. How could you possibly put 250 more cars on that road that can barely handle what it is now? And the lift station, the new one that was put in, can barely handle the amount of waste that it's doing now. If you ever drive by 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, not a nice smell. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Linda Kendrick, and I live in Hidden Lakes. And I think a concern that I have and my husband has is also the road and the traffic. And I am not educated on the cost, but my understanding from the planning board meeting is that the few neighborhoods that are in between Palm Coast Parkway and 100 could be assessed extra fees and or taxes to pay for the widening of Old Kings Road, should it ever be widened. I don't think it can handle much more than it has right now, and I agree with my neighbors about the flooding. The flooding has been really bad. People drive really fast on that road, and it's a very narrow and dark road. But would, you know, the question is, I know you can't answer it right now, but I am absolutely not willing, and I know none of my neighbors are either, to pay more money towards widening Old Kings Road to be able to accommodate more traffic, and that is a big concern. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Mr. Tobin.
Good evening. My name is Toby Tobin. I'm a resident of Palm Coast. And I would like to, I'm tempted to go whereas, therefore, because you're used to hearing that. But I would start out as whereas it's unusual to have a zoning change come in that actually requests a less intense use than the pre-existing use, which would not require a hearing. It's just hard for me to understand why that would happen. And it's also hard for me to understand how there's a issue with an apartment. If you were to think of an apartment house or apartment structure, where would you put it in Palm Coast? If you were given free choice to pick any vacant piece of property in Palm Coast, this is probably one of the very most appropriate places to put an apartment complex. It's near the hospital. It's near Target. It's near the beach. And the traffic is handled with fairly recent upgrades to our infrastructure. And I'd just like to say that if you follow the logic of the people who have spoken before me and disapprove this request, as they're asking you to do, I would recommend that you not do that, first of all. And I'd like to point out to the people who have spoken before me that if your logic had prevailed over the last 10 to 12 years, you would not have a Target, you would not have an Epic Theater, you would not have an Island Walk complex, and you would not have a Hidden Lakes or a Toscana. So, I mean, if that's where you really think you want to go, then, I mean, I can't change your mind, but I certainly urge the City Council to not pay too much attention to your requests. Thank you for your time.
Next speaker. This is a public meeting.
Hi, good evening. I'm Gretchen Smith, and I'm a resident of Palm Coast, and I also work at the Flagler County Chamber. And I'm here tonight not to support the business concept of this, but we're a visitor center, and we welcome newcomers every day. And I've been in the Chamber now for 9 years, and every single day it seems like we get newcomers to Flagler County, senior citizens, people who had great jobs and have retired now. They're moving here. They fall in love with our area, and they say, why are there no patio homes? Why are there no townhomes? Why are there no apartments? Because, you know what, honestly, we're retired, and we don't want to buy a house. And here we have another opportunity in front of us. And we're growing. Flagler County's growing. We get these people in every single day. They don't want to buy a house. They want to have no overhead. And this seems, again, like a great opportunity, and I hope that you take that into consideration.
Thank you. Next speaker. Okay, I'll close public comment. We will take comments one by one.
Madam Mayor, the applicant should be given an opportunity to have just to rebut if it so wishes under our process.
I think there should be a few things that need to be clarified. There was, an important question regarding the lift station, the pump station, and unless something wonderful has changed, those lift stations are always designed and paid for and installed by the developer or the applicant. If you look at the little box at the top of Kings Point, that's the lift station that serves that development and whatever it can serve. Whenever there's a site plan that comes in and you actually know your density, you know your planned infrastructure, there will be an analysis done to determine whether any additional utility infrastructure needs to be installed, including a lift station, and that would be on the applicant to not only pay for the design but also the installation costs. The traffic issue is an interesting one. As was stated in the staff report, this use, if you look at the map, this map's fine for my purposes, but everything is red from the corner all the way up to Town Center Boulevard. It is red, and that is the commercial zoning. Those commercial designations were actually done through what's called a request for zoning, which was handled when the city first adopted its zoning map. It was when the city was doing its uniform zoning map, they actually requested the zoning at that time. So one of the first things I actually did when I first passed the bar was file those requests for zoning. So that's how long it's been. I mean, this was 2004, 2005 when that process started. If not 2006, was that? Yeah, 2006 when those requests for zoning were approved. So the commercial designation on the zoning map has been there for a long time. There was a comment made about anchor stores. We actually, the city staff, myself, several other people involved, worked really hard to get this road project approved and the right-of-way set aside, the realignment plan and designed in order to bring a Walmart, which was supposed to be the anchor for this area. Walmart, unfortunately, decided to change its mind because of the downturn and because of the lack of rooftops. They based their decision on rooftops that were planned that never were built. And you know, the circumstances have changed. Bringing in some rooftops here, we hope, will drive more commercial development. Initially, it will take an impact off the road. The numbers that were put in that staff report about 4,000 trips versus 900 trips, that's the reality in terms of generation of traffic. It also should be understood that as far as the applicant, the landowner has contributed quite a bit towards the transportation infrastructure. First of all, at one point, Old Kings Interchange, which was a corporation that was the parent company of the Kings Point and Flagler Pioneer companies, it actually owned Old Kings Road. It was a privately owned right-of-way. That was dedicated to the county and then subsequently deeded to the city from the county. When the realignment was planned, there was not only the new land for the right-of-way, but also an additional, 66 feet added on that was deeded without consideration to the city in order to enable this project to go through. And then in addition to that, there was a comment made about assessments for the road widening to the north. These particular landowners have been paying not only the interest initially when the project was first started, but the assessments since then. So they have been contributing as much as anybody possibly could towards the infrastructure that supports their lands. And now we're actually taking some burden off of it with the rezoning. So I think that's important to point out. One last point, there was a comment about the type of housing, senior housing. This is just a rezoning, but ultimately the type of product, the type of residents that are going to be in any kind of multifamily project are going to be driven by the local demographics. And I think a developer would be doing a poor job if they weren't planning for accommodating all types, particularly in Palm Coast, of all ages, to enable people to live and comfortably, whether it's of any age, but including senior housing. But, you know, we're not at that point yet. There will be another opportunity for both the public to make comments as well as planning board and possibly city council to review once we get to that level. Right now we're just changing the red to brown, and as you guys all know, there's not a lot of brown in the city. And where the brown currently is not necessarily ideal. In this particular case, as Mr. Tobin pointed out, there are no neighbors that are immediately impacted in terms of it being in their backyard, like other applicants and applications that you've recently seen. So unless you have any questions.
I'm just going to take some items one by one that have not been answered. About the school district and at its limit with Old Kings Road, were there discussions about capacity and Mr. Lennon, whoever wants to take this one?
Ray Tyner, planning manager. There was some discussion with the school board. In our process, we have an interlocal agreement with the county to assess for the level of service and capacity. With this level where we are now at the zoning, it's just a general statement. Yes, there is capacity. Once they come in for a site plan, they'll have to organize through the application process. The school board is part of our application process. They will need to get approval from the school board and make sure that there's capacity. And if there's not capacity, the developer then will go into an agreement with the school board.
The capacity is there in the school district. Yes. This one school may not have it, but there's plenty of capacity district-wide.
We've heard a lot about traffic. Can you address, and maybe someone from utility, more about this pump station? That seemed to be a frequent question that's been asked.
The traffic is, I think it was Bill explained that, how commercial generates a lot more traffic than the residential. This is about a quarter of what it would be. So as far as traffic impacts, the multifamily is quite a bit less. Yes, I would love to, and I've already warned Richard that he's going to have to explain the difference between a lift station and a lift station, because the fact of it is people are talking about two different lift stations, and they serve two different functions. So this should be entertaining at best. So, Richard, please.
Yes, Richard Adams, Utility Director. There seems to be a little bit of confusion about the lift stations. There's more than one lift station. Mr. Livingston explained the lift station that's closest to this project that may or may not be used to serve this project, and that will be up to the developer to make sure that has the capacity for this project. If it means upgrading the pumps, making the pump station larger, that would be under the responsibility of the developer. The master lift station on Old Kings Road that was recently upgraded has quite a bit of capacity because that's the way we built it. It's part of the major infrastructure that is the community-wide collection system, and that's what you pay impact fees for. You pay impact fees to pay for sewer plant capacity and major sewer collection system capacity. The individual capacity to serve just that project will be on the developer.
So, once again, what the residents are very familiar with is the new lift station, which is that main lift station that pushes the wastewater to the plant. Each development has to push their wastewater into that main line, and obviously because we just upgraded it, it's got plenty of capacity that's anticipating this whole area developing. But the lift station that was the small one that was just installed by the developer for Kings Point wasn't necessarily designed to handle this. If not, then the developer of this property would have to upgrade or do their own lift station. So that's where the confusion is. You've got two different kind of one of them is our main line, and the other one serves just the projects.
Okay. Thank you, Richard. As far as we've heard these comments frequently when we have these projects come before us about police and frequency of police calls to those multifamily units, and that's just not true. We've had Mark Harmon address this several times. We do crime stats. We collect those stats. We know where the calls are coming from, and there's no correlation between multi-use, multi-family apartments or condos or those types of residential units compared to single families.
Correct.
And probably a lot of the hospital employees that are right there probably travel and will be looking forward to having apartments right there near the hospital so they can have a place close by.
As far as, okay, so we've addressed obviously the traffic. The A-rated road of Old Kings, can you speak to the A-rated and how that comes about and what impact it had during the storm?
The rating is based on volume. And is there significant capacity in the road to handle the volume? In other words, do you end up having to stop at a red light two or three times? Is it causing backups, those type of things? And Old Kings Road, whether it's a four-lane or the two-lane, I drive it all the time, and you never have any problems with having any backups. Only place you might have right now would be at Palm Coast Parkway, and then that's in design to improve that intersection where you come right there by CVS and McDonald's. But it is definitely handles the capacity. If I could talk about the assessment district, is this whole area, including the four laning, is being paid for by an assessment district that the developers, property owners in that area put together. That included Hidden Lakes in Tuscana. However, we also charge each one of these developments impact fees, as we do it everywhere. So all the residential projects or houses in Hidden Lakes pay the same impact fee as any other residential, single-family residential. Those impact fees as a result of that district are all going towards the future improvement of Old Kings Road widening. The residents have already contributed when they bought their home, if you will, or whoever built the home, towards those improvements. So there is no additional assessment for those residents. The commercial area is different, and that was based on acreage and some other calculations. They may have their assessment reduced based on the amount of impact fees they have to pay, but there is a formula there as they develop as to, you can't double dip, you can't make them pay impact fees to widen the road and the assessment, but that won't impact the residential existing or future single family residential properties in Hidden Lakes and Tuscana.
And I think just the last statement I want to clarify, and I'll ask Mr. Reichman or Mr. Landon, as far as the notice for the 300 feet, that's required by law.
It is, and it's also in our land development code. And the distance is set forth in the land development code and by state law as far as the require. This is a situation where, because of the undeveloped nature of this, this area in general, the anticipated amount of folks that would respond to such a notice obviously was smaller than you would expect if this was a fully developed area.
Well, Mayor, let me try to also explain the confusion as to, well, nobody showed up to the meeting. There's actually two separate meetings, both of them required by code. One of them is what we require the developer to hold a neighborhood meeting, and that's separate from a public meeting with the planning board or city council. And that's the one that no one attended. We had no one come to. The other one that occurred was the planning board, which makes a recommendation to city council. That one, there was people, residents from Hidden Lakes and maybe some other areas, Tuscana, that did come to that. So those that you say, well, no one showed up for the first meeting, well, that was a different meeting than the planning board. There definitely were people who came and expressed their opinion at the first. And then Ray's going to clarify.
Yeah, just to add to, the 300 feet is for the neighborhood meeting. That just gets your direct neighbors out, who you're going to have the major impact. But, our code also requires the postings, the orange signs that we post, 10, 15 days ahead of a planning board meeting, ahead of a city council meeting. Those orange signs tell you, what the date's going to be for the council meeting or the planning board meeting. In addition, we also post in the paper of when the time is for the rezoning.
So the 300 feet, you got maybe some trees and some critters, but there are no people within 300 feet. Once again, it was stated, Hidden Lakes is a mile and a half away from this up Old Kings Road. So there's never a circle you draw around a development that says you have to notify people within a mile and a half. But because people drive by it, the notification, the signs, et cetera, is another way of providing notice. And obviously they saw that and came to the meeting. Hopefully that clarifies that.
Mayor, can I reiterate one fact? It's been stated several times before, but I want to. I've been hearing some terms that lawyers focus on are words and how we use them correctly. We've heard tonight about the project. There is no pending project. I want to make sure that's not. We're not here yet for that. That would be a site plan. That's the next step in the process. All we're here for tonight is the consideration of an application to change the zoning of this from a pretty high-intensity commercial use to a multifamily use. And that multifamily use is, at this point in time, speculative on whether that is going to be townhomes or whether it's going to be condominiums or whether it's going to be apartments. And the only reason I'm belaboring this is because I think that the general consensus is that we're talking about a project of apartments tonight, and that is not what this agenda item represents at all. This is just a change in the potential use of this and the density of that use from commercial to residential.
Okay. Thank you for comments. Any council questions or comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. We'll now move to agenda item number I-8, a resolution, 2017 Brownfield Area Designation. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, this is a resolution that is a request to designate the area there by the old cement plant, Colbert Road and Roberts Road. Typically, resolution, we wouldn't do a public meeting or public hearing type, but it's state law requires it for this. In fact, we have to do this twice. So this is not an ordinance, but it is a requirement to have a public hearing. And Bo's going to give the details here to meet those requirements.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. This evening, you have a request from Sunbelt Holdings, Colbert Lane, LLC, to designate approximately 182.75 acres, once again located between Colbert and Roberts Road near Sea Ray Boats in the Florida Brownfields Program. This designation is being sought so that the owner can access state tax credits and incentives to redevelop the property. The redevelopment of the property is complicated by cement kiln dust, or CKD dust, that's located on the property from the previous cement plant that was in operation here. For the city, there's no local incentive match requirement or anything like that. This program simply aids property owners to help clean up their property in accordance with DEP regulations and hopefully end up in redevelopment and increased tax base and jobs. With that, as Mr. Land noted, there's no action required tonight since we do have to have two public hearings in accordance with Florida statutes, but the applicant is here for any questions, and along with myself, and once again, if we could just open up for public comment, and then at the next business meeting, we'll be asking for your action.
Council, any questions? Yes.
I have one question. Is this designation to Brownfield required before they start the remediation of the kiln dust?
Yeah, I got it. In order to access the incentives and the credits, it is required.
Okay, understood.
Only if they want the incentives is it required.
Gotcha. We'll make sure that they couldn't touch it until this happened. Understood, yeah.
Any other questions, council members? I just had one quick question. I dealt with this property when I was on the county commission. CKD, it was a serious issue back then. I know that DEP was requiring the landowner to either encapsulate it so it wouldn't go airborne. Is that still the discussion point on how you're going to clean up the property, or has that been addressed yet?
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. My name is Michael Schnapstyler with the law firm of Cobb Cole, 149 South Ridgewood Avenue in Daytona Beach. Here tonight on behalf of the applicant, Sunbelt Holdings Colbert Lane LLC. They are a new owner of the property. They just recently acquired the property within the last month. The cement kiln dust is not a regulated DEP substance, but it's comprised of aluminum, limestone, iron, and other materials that are regulated. And as the mayor mentioned, there is a known issue out at the site related to the previous operation of the cement plant. There is a remedial action plan that the previous owner had approved by the Florida Department of Environmental Protection for management of the cement kiln dust, testing of the site, and encapsulation of it in an area that would not be developed with a deed restriction on place prohibiting that development. Our client is evaluating that plan right now to see how that fits into their overall development and use of the state brownfield program benefits, the tax credits, liability protection that Bo had mentioned will help facilitate that decision. Thank you.
I'll now open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number L8, please do so at this time. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Did you say no action? Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll move to agenda item number, it's J, which is the consent agenda. Any member of the public can make comment on agenda item number 9, 10, or 11. Please do so at this time. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number K, which is public participation. Any member of the public can speak on items not on the agenda. Please state your name for the record, and your 3 minutes will begin.
Kimball Medley, District 2, Palm Coast. I'm coming back before you again regarding charter review, and I know you're probably tired of hearing it, but I'm going to go ahead anyhow. When our city founders decided to seek autonomy from the county, they submitted a charter to the Florida legislature. And our founders did envision that there would be times when the charter needed to be changed. They provided city council with a mechanism for that. They also knew that electors would seek changes and oftentimes face a reluctant council. And they provided a mechanism for that as well. There are three ways to amend the charter. There's one way to review it. And our founders, as far from what I can tell in speaking with people who were there at that time, I don't think they ever envisioned that the city council members would essentially become the first charter review committee. But that's where we are today. The charter review committee is outlined using six sentences. It's written in fifth grade English. And the largest word recommendations consist of 15 letters and 5 syllables. It's not that difficult to understand. But the importance of such a committee cannot be overlooked. It relies on the appointment of 5 electors who live here in the city. And what we have is an outsourcing of this process to individuals who do not live in this city and one who currently has an exit strategy. And it's essentially denying the electors the right to be considered for such a committee. There's not a whole lot the citizens can do. We can't look to the Attorney General. Most of us don't have resources for declaratory relief. We're told our suggestions are going to be considered, but seriously, what are the odds of that? I don't see it happening. We have a hybrid process in place because essentially our council does not have the collective intestinal fortitude to direct charter officers to follow the charter. But what we can know is at least Section 10-2AB is definitely going to be changed, and it won't be changed in favor of the people. It's a matter of trust. You trust us during elections, campaigns, donations, fundraisers, knocking on doors. But when it comes to this, you don't trust us to review our charter. And I would underscore, it is our charter. And I have as much confidence in this hybrid process as I do for all NFL players to stand during the national anthem. Thank you.
Thank you for comments. Next speaker.
Jack Carroll from Palm Coast. I was driving down Belter Parkway, and this fence caught my eye. Half of it is down, and the other half is being held up by props. So I don't know if it's an outcome of the hurricane, but it's an eyesore. And spending all that money on Beltair to make it a place to enjoy driving on, it doesn't do us very much. So I would be thankful if you looked at it.
Thank you.
But that's, I think it's a little bit south of Rimfire.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Charles Ebert, Palm Coast Hidden Lakes. The one item that I don't understand, and the lady just spoke about the charter and so forth, is whenever we have business that comes in front of the council or the mayor and so forth, and the city manager and so forth, it always seems like you put us as second citizens. And she brought up a lot of things that I didn't even think about the charter. I have other things in my mind, but the one thing that really bothers me, you give us 3 minutes to speak our piece or speak our piece on whatever's going on. And then the rep has unlimited amount of time to BS you guys. And, you know, you work for us. We voted you here because we thought that you were going to represent us. And, you know, so far, I don't see much. And people that you've already spoken here today, you might be seeing exiting. Because people just don't care for the way our city and our government is being run locally. Okay, the charter's in here, and she brought up some good, interesting things. And my background in education is not that great about as identifying symbols and how many letters and so forth and so forth. But, you know, guys, we can't do much about the Washington, D.C., but we sure can do something about the city of Palm Coast. And we all need to work together. You know, we've had several things that have gone on here in the last 6 months and so forth, or about our city manager's problem, Waste Pro, this other thing and so forth. And you know what? We as citizens do not see anything that comes down from this council other than, okay, thank you very much for your comments, and thank you very much for my comments.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. You know, I was at the last workshop, and I thought about getting the stuff cleared away from your properties. And me living in Pine Grove, I said, I don't know when this is going to happen. But Councilman Cuff said, I hope you're picking up everywhere. Now, doggone it, soon as I got home, my 100-and-something footage was cleared. And I couldn't believe it. I said, Cuff did it. But I will tell you this. You know, one of the things that I asked about at the workshop was how many, on average, how many people came out for the charter review? And damn it, if they're that interested, how come you only had an average of 10 come out? Now, if it was that important, you know, she's talking this talk, but a whole lot of people ain't walking the walk. And that's the key thing. And I'm including myself. I didn't come out the one. That's because I was aching. but that's another story in itself. All I can say is, you know, things could be a whole lot worse and could be better. But it's a whole lot better than it is worse. I'll tell you that right now. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Steve Carr, Palm Coast. Just back when the Lois Westcott came and worked with the people of Palm Coast about, you know, becoming a city, one of the promises that was sort of made is that they were going to protect existing residential areas. And also in the comprehensive policy of the city, it says that projects won't have any adverse effect to existing residential areas. Well, Florida Park Drive is plagued with 8,600 cars per day, and it increases from time to time. So we look at it as we haven't been protected, and we look at it as other projects have come along that has had adversely affected our residential neighborhood because it has added traffic to our residential neighborhood. So what recourse do residents of a residential area have when it has such an adverse effect to our residential area? That's all I need to know is what recourse do we have? Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker. Close public comment. We'll take it question by question. Ms. Medley brought up many different points. I thank her for coming up and speaking on something that she's very passionate about. Mr. Carroll brought up about Beltair fence. I'm not sure falling down south of Rimfire. Can you have someone look at that and address that issue, please?
Up on the east side.
And then Mr. Ebert's comments about citizens and represent us. Mr. McCarthy, thank you for comments about debris cleanup. We'd certainly try to do the best we could. And then Mr. Carr's comments about impact on residential and recourse for residents. I mean, I think this is the time in public participation when we hear from residents about their concerns, and I think we all individually take them very seriously. So we'll now move to agenda item number L, which is discussion by City Council matters not on the agenda. I'm going to start with Council Member Cuff tonight, since I've been going back and forth.
The only comment I had is now that we appear to be getting into the final throes, I hope, and I think we all hope, of the debris cleanup. I assume at some point we'll get a report from staff at a workshop on the cost of all of this. You know, we read a lot about FEMA reimbursement and so forth, and I know that because of the combination of the storm and the other weather events that we had, we're probably facing some costs that FEMA won't be reimbursing to us since they weren't IRMA-related. But I know we've been doing a lot of pumping of lift stations and so forth. We've been doing a lot of cleanup that maybe isn't FEMA reimbursable. So when the numbers are in, I certainly would like to know what the grand total is and how much is reimbursable and how much isn't, so that we can be sure that our reserves are still ready for the next weather event that I hope won't be for a long time.
I'll address that in my comments.
Yeah.
Thank you. Is that all?
That's all I have.
Vice Mayor. Councilmember
Yes, I had a couple things. One, it was brought to my attention by my coworkers about the school zone drop-off where they drop their kids off and pick them up, that there's a bunch of people who are cutting the lines and starting to get a little bit dangerous. And I told them that it really wasn't necessarily our responsibility because it's the school districts, but it's also part of our Flagler County Sheriff's Office type agreement where whether or not we have additional staff there to try to prevent an issue from occurring. You have kids who are running across the street, the parents cut the line and they drop their kid off and let them run across. I don't know if there's anything that we can address as a council or so I'd like to make that point. And then I'd also received three emails about empty lots with vines. Now that a lot of the debris has been cleared up, beautification for empty lots has been something that I've been asked about several times. I've always pushed it aside and said that's not really our place to be beautifying lots that are owned by other people, but perhaps it's something our council can think about a solution for. And then my last comment would be that we as a council have very little control over what is actually built in a commercial zoning lot, and that's something that I get hammered with all the time, is that we have too many gas stations, we don't need another gas station, and this is one of our opportunities to prevent that from possibly happening. So I just want to make that comment, and besides that, I think we're doing a good thing here, so thank you.
Thank you. Did you want to bring up, address the school?
Yeah, Ms. Clufus, that is something that the school district officials, including those at the schools, Mr. Carman, Commander Carman, and sheriff deputies, school resource officers, the road officers, and the city all work together on. And yes, whenever it's brought to our attention that you have parents, it's really bad behavior on parents where they drop their. I mean, I've seen them on State Road 100 pull off on the side of the road across from, you know, heading to the eastbound, across from FPC, let their teenagers off so they can run across State Road 100 to get to school. I mean, it just so anytime we see that, we always will call the deputies, and it will be at first a knock and talk. We will put up a no parking sign during those hours to make sure that legally, if they don't come around, that we can actually get them for parking where there's no parking. And then we rely on the schools to obviously let us know when a problem happens and the parents. But anytime you hear, it's a pet peeve of mine because we have too many safety issues out there around our schools, that anytime you hear one of those, let us know. We just had one last week at Wadsworth that immediately.
That's what I was going to touch on. Ms. Lennon just called me, I think it was 2 days ago. Last Friday. And I passed it on to the sergeant. I reiterated to him. And each resource officer is assigned to a school, so we'll make sure they're all made aware of it.
Okay. Anytime. We'll get on that one right away. The second issue was
the empty lots.
Lots. I think Vice Mayor Nobile brought that up during our strategic action plan, I think staff is supposed to be.
It's actually in our strategic action plan to address this year, so you'll have something come your way. Difficult issue, obviously. A lot of absentee property owners, and it will be a difficult one. But we'll bring something to you so you can have some discussions on it.
Thank you.
And I know it's like a broken record, and I want to address Ms. Medley and her concerns, because the intent from the City Council is to do a charter review. So however a charter review is supposed to be done, we are in the middle of a charter review right now. And I understand that the charter itself says it has to be done by a committee elected by us. We opted out of that, and we're doing a charter review with everybody, the way I see it. We're allowing many meetings, and even the meetings after these meetings have been closed will still have time where people can get up and speak about their ideas. And I understand that people think that we're listening to your ideas and then we're not going to take it into consideration, but we've asked for a summary of everything people have said, not just at the meetings, because there was a low turnout, but also people that write into us personally, people that write in and post it on our website, and we're going to take all of that. And I have faith that all of us together will do the right thing, and if something has come out to be changed in the charter that the people of Palm Coast really want changed, I believe that we would do it. I believe that was the idea we had when we went this route. So I know you're not happy with the process. not sure I'm really happy with the process now that I've heard it all, but I think in the long run, everybody's going to be involved in this first charter, and I think it'll end up being a summary of everybody, and we'll end up making changes that everyone can be happy with. And that's it.
I have nothing. Discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Nothing, Madam Mayor.
Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda.
Let me start with my least favorite subject now, storm fatigue, I think it's called. But the good news is as of today, and I'm going to repeat what I said this earlier in the meeting just because I think it's important. It's one of those that it's affecting all neighborhoods, is that although we have completed our first pass this week, and that I can't guarantee you we got every street because of just the fact of how the debris is placed out there, et cetera. But we're going on to the second pass, and that's more of a targeted where we keep a list of all those that are larger. That is starting tomorrow, so that is really good news. And this is what happens once we can get the national companies in here, that this is what they do and how quickly it goes compared to, you know, a packer truck, a regular trash truck, and people trying to throw things in the back of it. It doesn't work well, and that's what we were having to deal with. The issue of costs that Mr. Cuff asked about, first of all, in your next workshop and then your next business meeting, there will be a budget amendment that's caused by Irma. You know, a lot of people, it's kind of hard to believe, but last fiscal year, October 16 through September 30th of 17, we had two hurricanes. Matthew was actually in last fiscal year, and Irma was in last fiscal year. So we amended our emergency fund budget. I don't have exact hazardous weight. Let's just call emergency fund. At the time, you approved the budget back in September, but that wasn't including Irma. So we're going to bring it back to you. You're going to have to amend it again. Do we have funds in there right now? No, but we do have reserves and other funds to cover this cost. So anything that we think is going to be reimbursable by FEMA, we will charge it to that fund, but cover it by our reserves and the other operating funds of utility, general fund, et cetera. They will only be charged the appropriate amount. FEMA doesn't reimburse us for everything. To Mr. Cuff's point, we won't be ready with final numbers because we're still, you know, the invoices are still coming in. By next week, we'll give you a rough estimate, and then eventually we'll bring back a full report as to what the final numbers are and how much we're going to ask for reimbursement from FEMA, et cetera, as those numbers come in. It is a long, lengthy process. A lot of everything in triplicate and all those type of things that's required for federal reimbursement. But we will keep you updated on that. But the rough numbers we'll give to you next week on that one. The other point I want to make is that as of today, we instructed Waste Pro to go back to normal schedule in all areas. They will not pick up the big piles, just like they wouldn't any Wednesday, but we will have crews coming in to pick up the big piles behind them. If you start putting out big piles after we come through your second pass, you're going to be tagged, and you're going to have to pay for those to go away because we can't keep doing this, and the second pass is going to be.
Big pile means the pile's larger than the specifications.
Right, which is four cubic feet. Yep, that's what Waste Pro would be expected to pick up, and then we'll pick up everything else. A couple other things, you know, speaking of finances and the fact that we are financially strong and that we can handle the cash flow for emergencies like this, but that doesn't happen by accident. And we recently received a notification of two national awards. Once again, finance has had a number of awards. The Government Finance Officers Association is kind of the organization that puts these together in the criteria. We got the achievement for excellence in financial reporting. This is basically our financial reports. This is what the accountants look at. If you can read those and understand all those, you've got an expertise in that area. But we don't just do that. We also do one that is intended to have a layperson be able to understand. And that is called the popular annual financial reporting, and we receive outstanding achievement in that area too. So not only to keep the accountants happy and make sure the auditor and everything is happy and we pass all their criteria, but also trying to provide information to the public. And finances gets awards in both of those each year. That is not that common on the popular. Not every city and county does that. Lastly is, although Cindy's not here, she sent me some activities in advance, which is becoming kind of a routine here for us. The most important is this Saturday, Veterans Day. The 11th is we have our Heroes Park ceremony at 8 a.m. It's going to be highlighted by the Navy Band Southeast, what will be there to play. So that will hopefully people will come out. Once again, Heroes Park, Saturday at 8 a.m. Fire Department is doing some safety things on the 15th at Fire Station 25, 1 to 4. They're doing child car seat safety. This is something that we'll do anytime. Anybody stop by, but we're trying to get that message out that if you need some help with knowing how to install and make sure that your infant seat is installed correctly, we'll do that at the Fire Department. And then they're going to do something different. I don't have the details yet, and the details aren't out. But one of the common calls we get during the holidays is the turkey that was put into the fryer, that the turkey decided it didn't like the fryer, and it sprayed things. And next thing you know, we got a fire going on. So they're going to do a little turkey frying safety tip, how to avoid causing a fire by cooking your turkey with hot oil.
Will there be turkey served?
So,
yes,
so stay tuned for that. And 2 weeks from tonight is Food Truck Tuesday. And then I also have down here Feet to Feast, the 5K run on Thanksgiving Day that the city sponsors. Very popular run. It will start at the amphitheater on Daytona State Campus. Mayor, I think that's all I have.
Motion to adjourn. It's adjourned.